Chapter 7. Pain and dizziness from the fever made Richard only dimly aware that his head had sunk to the table. He groaned while his mind spun with the implications of what Kalin had told Zed, of the prophecy of the secret book of counted shadows come to life. Then Zed was at his side, lifting him, telling Kalin to help get him into the house. As he walked with their help, the ground slipped this way and that, making it difficult to catch it with his feet. Then they were laying him down on a bed, covering him up. He knew they were talking, but he couldn't make sense of the words, which slurred in his mind. Darkness sucked his mind in. Then there was light. He seemed to float back up, only to spiral down again. He wondered who he was and what was happening. Time passed as the room spun and rolled and tilted. He gripped the bed to keep from being flung off. Sometimes he knew where he was and tried desperately to hold on to what he knew, only to slip away again into blackness. He became aware again, realizing that time had passed, though he didn't have any idea how much. Was it dark? Maybe it was just that the curtains were pulled. Someone, he realized, was putting a cool, wet cloth on his forehead. His mother smoothed back his hair. Her touch felt comforting, soothing. He could almost make out her face. She was so good. She always took such good care of him. Until she died, he wanted to cry. She was dead. Still, she smoothed his hair. That couldn't be. It had to be someone else. But who? Then he remembered. It was Kalin. He spoke her name. Kalin was smoothing his hair. I am here. It came back to him, rushing back in a torrent. The murder of his father, the vine that bit him, Kalin, the four men on the cliff, his brother's speech, someone waiting for him at his house, the Gar, the Night Wisp, telling him to seek the answer or die. What Kalin said, that the three boxes of Ordon were in play, and his secret, the Book of Counted Shadows. He remembered how his father had taken him to the secret place in the woods, and had told him how he had saved the Book of Counted Shadows from the peril it was in from the beast that guarded it until its master could come. How he had brought it with him to Westland to keep it from those covetous hands, hands that the keeper of the book didn't know threatened. His father had told him how there was danger as long as the book existed, but he couldn't destroy the knowledge in it. He had no right. It belonged to the keeper of the book, and it must be kept safe until it could be returned. The only way to do that was to commit the book to memory, and then burn it. Only in that way could the knowledge be preserved, but not stolen, as it otherwise surely would be. His father chose Richard. That it was to be Richard, and not Michael, was for reasons of his own. No one could know of the book, not even Michael. Only the keeper of the book, no one else, only the keeper. He said Richard might never find the keeper, and in that case he was to pass the book on to his child, and then that child to his own, and so on, for as long as was necessary. His father couldn't tell him who the keeper of the book was, as he didn't know. Richard asked how he was to know the keeper, but his father said only that he would have to find the answer himself, and not to tell anyone, ever, except the keeper. His father told Richard he was not to tell his own brother, or even his best friend, Zed. Richard swore on his life. His father had never once looked in the book, only Richard. Day after day, week after week, with breaks only when he traveled, his father took him to the secret place deep in the woods, where he sat and watched Richard reading the book over and over. Michael was usually off with his friends, and had no interest in going into the woods even if he was at home, and it wasn't uncommon for Richard not to visit Zed when his father was home, so neither had reason to know of the frequent trips to the woods. Richard would write down what he memorized and check it against the book. Each time his father burned the papers and had him do it again. His father apologized every day for the burden he was placing on Richard. He asked for forgiveness from his son at the end of every day in the woods. Richard never resented having to learn the book. He considered it an honor to be entrusted by his father. He wrote the book from beginning to end 100 times without error before he satisfied himself that he could never forget a single word. He knew by reading it that any word left out would spell disaster. When he assured his father that it was committed to memory, they put the book back in the hiding place in the rocks and left it for 3 years. After that time, when Richard was beyond his middle teens, they returned one fall day, and his father said if Richard could write the whole book without a single mistake, they could both be satisfied it was learned perfectly, and they would burn the book. Richard wrote without hesitation from beginning to end. It was perfect. Together they built a fire, stacking on more than enough wood, until the heat drove them back. His father handed him the book and told him that if he was sure, to throw the book into the fire. Richard held the Book of Counted Shadows in the crook of his arm, running his fingers over the leather cover. He held his father's trust in his arms, held the trust of everyone in his arms, and he felt the weight of the burden. He gave the book to the fire. In that moment, he was no longer a child. The flames swirled around the book, embracing, caressing, consuming. Colors and forms spiraled up, and a roaring cry came forth. Strange beams of light shot skyward. Wind made their cloaks flap as the fire sucked leaves and twigs into itself, adding to the flames and heat. Phantoms appeared, spreading their arms as if being fed by the blaze, their voices racing away on the wind. The two of them stood as if turned to stone, unable to move, unable even to turn away from the sight. Searing heat turned to wind as cold as the deepest winter night, sending chills up their spines, taking their breath from them. Then the cold was gone, and the fire turned to a white light that consumed everything in its brightness, as if they were standing in the sun. Just as suddenly, it was gone. In its place, silence. The fire was out. Wisps of smoke rose slowly from the blackened wood into the autumn air. The book was gone. Richard knew what he had seen. He had seen magic. Richard felt a hand resting on his shoulder and opened his eyes. It was Kaylin. In the firelight coming through the doorway, he could see she was sitting in a chair pulled close to his bed. Zed's big old coon cat was curled up, sleeping in her lap. "Where's Zed?" he asked, sleepy-eyed. "He has gone to find the root you need." Her voice was soft and calming. "It has been dark for hours now, but he said not to be concerned if it took him time to find the root. He said that you would go in and out of sleep, but would be safe until he returned. He said the drink he gave you before would keep you safe until he is back." Richard realized, for the first time, that she was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Her hair was tumbled down around her face and shoulders, and he wanted very much to touch it, but didn't. It was enough to feel her hand on his shoulder, to know she was there, and that he was not alone. "How do you feel?" Her voice was so soft, so gentle, that he couldn't imagine why Zed had been afraid of her. "I would rather fight another quad than another snake vine." She smiled her special smile, her private smile of sharing something with him, as she wiped his brow with the cloth. He reached up and grabbed her wrist. She stopped and looked into his eyes. "Kaylin, Zed is my friend of many years. He is like a second father to me. Promise me you won't do anything to hurt him. I could not bear it." She looked at him reassuringly. "I like him too, very much. He is a good man, just as you said. I have no desire to hurt him, only to seek his help in finding the wizard." He gripped her wrist tighter. "Promise me." "Richard, everything will be fine. He will help us." He remembered her fingers on his throat and the look in her eyes when she thought he was trying to poison her with an apple. Promise me. I have already made promises to others, some of whom have given their lives. I have responsibilities to the lives of others, many others. Promise me. She put her other hand on the side of his face. I am sorry, Richard. I cannot. He released her wrist, turned, and closed his eyes as she took her hand from his face. He thought about the book, all that it meant, and realized he was making a selfish request. Would he trick her to save Zed, only to have him die with them? Would he doom all the others to death or slavery just to see his friend live a couple more months? Could he condemn her to death, too, for nothing? He felt ashamed at his own stupidity. He had no right to ask her to make such a promise. It would be wrong for her to do so. He was glad she had not lied to him, but he knew that just because Zed had asked about the trouble they were in did not mean he would help with anything to do from across the boundary. Kaelin, this fever is making me foolish. Please forgive me. I have never met another with your courage. I know you are trying to save us all. Zed will help us. I will see to it. Promise me only that you will wait until I am better. Give me the chance to convince him. She squeezed her hand on his shoulder. That is a promise I can make. I know you care about your friend. I would despair if you didn't. That does not make you foolish. Rest now. He tried not to close his eyes, since when he did, everything started spinning uncontrollably. But talking had sapped his strength, and soon the blackness pulled him back in. His thoughts were once again sucked into the void. Sometimes he came partway back and wandered in troubled dreams. Sometimes he wandered in places empty even of illusion. The cat came awake, his ears perking up. Richard slept on. Sounds that only the cat could hear made him jump off Kaelin's lap, trot to the door, and sit on his haunches, waiting. Kaelin waited too, and since the cat didn't raise his fur, she stayed by Richard. A thin voice came from outside.
Cat? Cat? Where have you gotten to? Well, you can just stay out here, then.
The door squeaked open.
There you are.
The cat ran out the doorway.
Suit yourself,
Zed called after him.
How is Richard? He called to her.
When he came into the room, Kaelin answered from the chair. He came awake several times, but he is sleeping now. Did you find the root you need?
I wouldn't be here otherwise. Did he have anything to say when he was awake?
Kaelin smiled up at the old man, just that he was worried about you. He turned and went back into the front room, grumbling.
Not without good reason.
Sitting at the table, he peeled the roots, cut them into thin wafers, put the wafers into a pot with some water, and then hung the pot on the crane over the fire. He threw the peels and then two sticks of wood into the fire before going to the cupboard and pulling down a number of different sized jars. Without hesitation, he selected first one jar, then another, pouring different colored powders into a black stone mortar. With a white pestle, he ground the reds, blues, yellows, browns, and greens together until it was all the color of dry mud. After licking the end of his finger, he dipped it in the mortar to collect a sample. He put the finger to his tongue for a taste and lifted an eyebrow while he smacked his lips and pondered. At last he smiled and nodded in satisfaction. He poured the powder into the pot, blending it in with a spoon from a hook at the side of the fireplace. He stirred slowly while watching the concoction bubble. For nearly 2 hours he stirred and watched. When at last he determined that the work was done, he plunked the pot on the table to cool. Zed collected a bowl and cloth, and after a while called to Kaelin to come help him. She came quickly to his side, and he instructed her how to hold the cloth over the bowl while he poured the mixture through. He spun his finger around in the air.
Now twist the cloth around and around to squeeze the liquid out. When it's all out, throw the cloth and its contents in the fire.
She looked at him, puzzled. Zed lifted an eyebrow.
The part left in there is poison. Richard should be awake any time now. Then we give him the liquid in the bowl. You keep squeezing. I will check on him.
Zed went into the bedroom, bent over Richard, and found him to be deeply unconscious. He turned and saw that Kaylin's back was to him as she worked at her task. He bent over, placing a middle finger to Richard's forehead. Richard's eyes snapped open.
"Dear one," Zed called into the other room, "we are in luck. He has just come awake. Bring the bowl."
Richard blinked. "Zed, are you all right? Is everything all right?"
"Yes, yes, everything is fine."
Kaylin came in, holding the bowl carefully, trying not to spill any. Zed helped Richard sit up so he could drink. When he finished, Zed helped him to lie back down.
"That will make you sleep and break the fever. The next time you awake, you will be well. You have my word, so worry no more as you rest."
"Thank you, Zed." Richard was asleep before he could say more. Zed left and then returned with a tin plate, insisting that Kaylin take the chair.
"The thorn will not be able to stand the root," he explained. "It will have to leave his body."
He put the plate under Richard's hand and sat down on the edge of the bed to wait. They both listened to Richard's deep breathing and the crackling of the fire from the other room. Otherwise, the house was still. It was Zed who broke the silence first.
"It is dangerous for a confessor to travel alone, dear one. Where is your wizard?"
She looked up at him with tired eyes. "My wizard sold his services to a queen." Zed gave a disapproving scowl.
"He abandoned his responsibilities to the confessors? What is his name?"
"Giller."
"Giller."
He repeated the name with a sour expression, then leaned toward her a bit.
"So why did another not come with you?"
She gave him a hard look. "Because they are all dead, at their own hands. Before they died, they all gathered and cast a web to see me safely through the boundary, with the guidance of a night wisp." Zed stood at this news. Sadness and concern etched his face as he rubbed his chin. "You knew the wizards?" she asked.
"Yes, yes. I lived in the Midlands a long time ago."
"And the Great One? You know him also?" Zed smiled, rearranged his robes, and seated himself again.
"You are persistent, dear one. Yes, I knew the old wizard once. But even if you could find him, I don't think he would have anything to do with this business. He would not be inclined to help the Midlands."
Kaylin leaned forward, taking his hands in hers. Her voice was soft but intense. "Zed, there are many people who disapprove of the High Council of the Midlands and its greed. They wish it were not so, but they are just common people who have no say. They only wish to live their lives in peace. Darkon Rall has taken the food that was stored for the coming winter and given it to the army. They waste it or let it rot or sell it back to the people they stole it from. Already there is hunger. This winter there will be death. Fire has been outlawed. People are cold. Rall says it is all the Great Wizard's fault for not coming forward to be put on trial as an enemy of the people. He says the wizard has brought this on them, that he is to blame. He doesn't explain how this could be, but many believe it anyway. Many believe everything Rall says, even though what they see with their own eyes should be enough to tell them otherwise. The wizards were under constant threat and forbidden by edict from using magic. They knew that sooner or later they would be used against the people. They may have made mistakes in the past and disappointed their teacher, but the most important thing they were taught was to be protectors of the people and in no way to bring them harm. As their most loving act for the people, they gave their lives to stop Darkon Rall. I think their teacher would have been proud. But this is not about just the Midlands. The boundary between Dahara and the Midlands is down. The boundary between the Midlands and Westland is failing, and soon it too will be down. The people of Westland will be taken by the very thing they fear most, magic. Terrible, frightening magic like none they have ever imagined. Zed showed no emotion, offered no objection or opinion, only listened. He continued to allow her to hold his hands. All I have said, the great wizard could have an argument for. But the fact that Darkon Rall has put the three boxes of Warden into play is something altogether different. If he succeeds, then on the first day of winter it will be too late for anyone. That includes the wizard. Rall already searches for him. It is personal vengeance he seeks. Many have died because they could not offer his name. When Rall opens the correct box, though, he will have unchallenged power over all things living. And then the wizard will be his. He can hide in Westland all he wants, but come the first day of winter, his hiding is over. Darkon Rall will have him. There was bitterness in her expression. Zed, Darkon Rall has used quads to kill all the other confessors. I found my sister after they were finished with her. She died in my arms. With all the others dead, that leaves only me. The wizards knew their teacher did not want to help, so they sent me as the last hope. If he is too foolish to see that in helping us he helps himself, then I must use my power against him, to make him help. Zed raised an eyebrow.
And what is one dried-up old wizard to do against the power of this Darkon Rall?
He was now holding her hands in his. He must appoint a seeker.
What? Zed jumped to his feet. Dear one, you don't know what you are talking about.
Confused, Kaelin leaned back a little. What do you mean?
Seekers appoint themselves. The wizard just sort of recognizes what has happened and makes it official.
I don't understand. I thought the wizard picked the person, the right person. Zed sat back down, rubbing his chin.
Well, that's true in a sense, but backwards. A true seeker, one who can make a difference, must show himself to be a seeker. The wizard doesn't point to someone and say, "Here is the sword of truth, you will be the seeker." He doesn't really have a choice in the matter. It isn't something you can train someone for. One should simply be a seeker and show himself to be so by his actions. A wizard must watch a person for years to be sure. A seeker doesn't have to be the smartest person, but he has to be the right person. He has to have the right qualities within himself. A true seeker is a rare person. The seeker is a balance point of power. The council made the appointment a political bone to be thrown to one of the sniveling dogs at their feet. It was a sought-after post because of the power a seeker wields. But the council didn't understand. It wasn't the post that brought the power to the person, it was the person that brought the power to the post.
He edged closer to her.
Kaelin, you were born after the council took this power upon itself, so you may have seen a seeker when you were young. But in those days they were pretend seekers. You have never seen the real thing.
His eyes got round in the telling, his voice low and full of passion.
I have seen a true seeker make a king quake in his boots with the asking of a single question. When a real seeker draws the sword of truth,
he held his hands up and rolled his eyes in delight.
Righteous anger can be an extraordinary thing to behold.
Kaelin smiled at his excitement.
It can make the good tremble with joy and the wicked shiver in fear.
The smile left his face.
But people rarely believe the truth when they see it, and less so when they don't want to. And that makes the position of seeker a dangerous one. He is an obstacle to those who would subvert power. He draws lightning from many sides. Most often he stands alone, and frequently not long.
I know the feeling well, she said, with only the hint of a smile.
Zed leaned closer. Against Darkon Rall, I doubt even a true seeker would last long. And then what?
She took up his hands again.
Zed, we must try. It is our only chance. If we don't take it, we have none.
He sat up, pulling away from her.
Any person the wizard picks would not know the Midlands. He would have no chance there. It would be a sentence of quick death.
That is the other reason I was sent. To be his guide and stand with him. To offer my life, if need be, to help protect him. Confessors spend their life traveling the lands. I have been almost everywhere in the Midlands. A confessor is trained from birth in languages. She has to be, because she never knows where she will be called. I speak every major language, and most of the minor ones. And as far as drawing lightning, a confessor draws her fair share. If we were easy to kill, Rawl would not need to send quads to get the job done. And many of them have died in the doing. I can help protect the Seeker, if need be, with my own life.
What you propose not only would put someone's life at terrible risk, a Seeker, dear one, but yours also.
She raised an eyebrow. I am hunted now. If you have a better way, put words to it. Before Zed could answer, Richard moaned. The old man looked over at him and then rose.
It is time.
Kaelin stood up next to him as he lifted Richard's arm by the wrist, holding the wounded hand over the tin plate. Blood dripped onto the plate with soft, hollow sounds. The thorn fell out with a small, wet splash. Kaelin reached for it.
Zed grabbed her wrist. Don't do that, dear one. Now that it has been expelled from its host, it will be anxious to have a new one. Watch.
She took her hand back as he put his bony finger on the plate, several inches from the thorn. It wiggled its way toward the finger, leaving a thin trail of blood. He took his finger away and handed her the plate.
Hold it from underneath and take it to the hearth. Put it on the fire, face down, and leave it there.
While she did as Zed requested, he cleaned the wound and applied a salve. When Kaelin returned, he held Richard's hand while she wrapped it. Zed watched her hands as she worked.
Why have you not told him what you are? That you are a confessor?
There was a hard edge to his voice. Hers came back in kind. Because of the way you reacted when you recognized me as a confessor. She paused, and the harshness left her voice. Somehow we have become friends. I am inexperienced in that, but I am very experienced at being a confessor. I have seen reactions like yours all my life. When I leave with the Seeker, I will tell him. Until then, I would very much like to have his friendship. Is that too much to ask? To be allowed the simple human pleasure of a friend? The friendship will end soon enough when I tell him. When she finished, Zed put a finger under her chin, raising her face to his gentle smile.
When I first saw you, I reacted foolishly, mostly to the surprise of seeing a confessor. I had not expected ever to see one again. I quit the Midlands to be free of the magic. You were an intrusion into my solitude. I apologize for my reaction and for making you feel unwelcome. I hope I have made it up to you. I am one who has respect for the confessors, perhaps more than you will ever know. You are a good woman, and you are welcome in my house.
Kaelin looked into his eyes a long moment. Thank you, Zedekus Zul Zorander. Zed's expression turned more dangerous than hers had when they had first met. She stood frozen with his fingers still under her chin, afraid to move, her eyes wide.
Know this, though, Mother Confessor.
His voice was only one step above a whisper, and deadly.
This boy has been my friend a good long time. If you touch him with your power, or if you choose him, you will answer to me. And you would not like that. Do you understand?
She swallowed hard, and managed to give a weak nod. Yes.
Good.
The danger left his face, leaving calm again in its place. He removed his finger from under her chin and began to turn to Richard. Kaelin let her breath out and, not willing to be intimidated, grabbed his arm, turning him back to her. Zed, I would not do that to him. Not because of what you said, but because I care for him. I want you to understand that. They faced off a long while, each measuring the other. Zed's impish smile returned, as disarming as ever.
If offered a choice, dear one, that is the way I would prefer it.
She relaxed, satisfied at having made her point, and gave him a quick hug that was returned earnestly.
There is one thing you have left unspoken. You have not asked for my help in finding the wizard.
No, and for now I won't. Richard fears what I would do if you were to say no. I promised I would not ask until he has a chance to ask you first. I gave him my word. Zed put a bony finger to his chin.
How interesting.
He laid his hand on her shoulder conspiratorially and changed the subject.
You know, dear one, you might make a good seeker yourself.
Me? A woman can be seeker? He lifted an eyebrow.
Of course, some of the best seekers have been women.
I already have an impossible job. She frowned. I don't need two. Zed chuckled, his eyes sparkling.
Perhaps you are right. Now it's very late, dear one. Go to my bed in the next room and get yourself some needed sleep. I will sit with Richard.
No. She shook her head and plopped down in the chair. I don't want to leave him for now. Zed shrugged.
As you wish.
He walked behind her and patted her shoulder reassuringly.
As you wish.
He gently reached up and put a middle finger to each of her temples, rubbing in little circles. She moaned softly as her eyes closed.
Sleep, dear one, he whispered. Sleep.
She folded her arms down onto the edge of the bed, and her head sank onto her arms. She was deeply asleep. After he put a blanket over her, Zed went to the front room and pulled open the door, looking out into the night.
Cat! Come here! I want you!
The cat came running in and rubbed himself against Zed's legs, swishing his tail up. Zed bent down and scratched him behind the ears.
Go in and sleep on the young woman's lap. Keep her warm.
The cat padded off to the bedroom as the old man stepped out into the cold night air. The wind whipped Zed's robes as he walked the narrow path through the tall grass. The clouds were thin, illuminated by the moon, which gave enough light to see by, even though he didn't need it. He had walked the same route thousands of times.
Nothing is ever easy, he muttered as he went.
Near a stand of trees, he stopped, listening. Slowly, he turned about, peering into the shadows, watching the branches bend and sway in the breeze, testing the air with his nose. He searched for an alien movement. A fly bit his neck. He swatted it angrily, picked the offender off his neck, and glared at it.
Bloodfly. Bags. I thought as much, he complained.
From the brush nearby, something came toward him in a terrible rush. Wings and fur and teeth came charging. Hands on his hips, Zed waited. Just before it was on him, he held up a hand, bringing the short-tailed gar to a lurching halt. It was half again as tall as he, full-grown, and twice as fierce as a long-tailed gar. The beast growled and blinked, its great muscles flexing as it fought against the force that kept it from reaching out and grabbing the old man. It was furious that it had not yet killed him. Zed reached up and with a crooked finger beckoned it to lean closer. The gar, panting in rage, bent toward him. Zed jammed his finger hard under its chin.
What is your name? He hissed.
The beast grunted twice and made a sound from deep in its throat. Zed gave a nod.
I will remember it. Tell me, do you wish to live or to die?
The gar struggled to back away, but was unable to.
Good. Then you will do exactly as I say. Somewhere between here and Dahara, a quad comes this way. Hunt them and kill them. When you have done so, go back to Dahara to where you came from. Do these things and I will let you live, but I will remember your name, and if you fail to kill the quad or ever come back after your task is done, I will kill you and feed you to your flies. Do you agree to my terms?
The gar grunted an acknowledgement.
Good. Then begone.
Zed removed his finger from under the guard's chin. Scrambling to get away, the beast flapped its wings frantically, beating down the grass as it stumbled along. At last the gar was airborne. Zed watched it as it circled, searching for the quad. As the hunt moved steadily east, the circle seemed to get smaller until the old man could no longer see the beast. Only then did he continue on to the top of the hill. Standing next to his cloud rock, Zed pointed down at it and began turning his bony finger in a circle as if stirring a stew. The massive rock grated against the ground as it tried to revolve with the movement of Zed's finger. The rock shuddered, trying to rotate its own weight. Popping and snapping, it fractured, sending hairline cracks shooting across its surface. Its trembling bulk struggled against the force being applied. The granular structure of the stone began to soften. Unable to maintain its state any longer, the texture of the rock liquefied enough to allow its mass to rotate with the movement of the finger above it. Gradually, the speed of Zed's stirring increased until light erupted from the rotating liquid rock. The light built in intensity with the speed of Zed's hand. As colors and sparkles of light spun, shadows and forms came into the center of the light and vanished as the fog of brightness increased. Light threatened to ignite the air about him. A dull roar, like the sound of wind rushing through a fissure, came forth. The smells of autumn changed to winter clarity, then spring's new plowed ground, summer's flowers, and back to autumn again. Clean, pure illumination chased the colors and sparkles away. The rock abruptly solidified, and Zed stepped atop it, into the light. The brightness faded to a faint glow that swirled like smoke. Before him stood two apparitions, mere shadows of form. Where sharpness should have been, their shapes softened like a dim memory, yet they were still recognizable, and the sight of them brought a quickness to Zed's heart. His mother's voice came hollow and distant. "What troubles you, son? Why have you called us after so many years?" Her arms stretched out to him. Zed's arms reached out, but could not touch her. "I am troubled by what the Mother Confessor tells me." "She speaks the truth." He closed his eyes and nodded as his arms lowered with hers. "It's true, then. All my students, save Giller, are dead. You are the only one left to protect the Mother Confessor." She drifted closer. "You must appoint the Seeker."
"The High Council sowed these seeds," he protested, frowning. "Now you want me to help? They turned my advice away. Let them live and die by their own greed."
Zed's father floated closer. "My son, why were you angry with your students?"
Zed scowled. "Because they put themselves before their duty to help their people."
"I see. And how is this different from what you do now?" The echo of his voice hung in the air. Zed's fists tightened.
"My help was offered, but turned away."
"And when has it not been so, that there would be those who were blind, or foolish, or greedy? Would you let them have their way over you so easily? Would you let them so simply prevent you from helping those who would be helped? Your abandonment of the people may have a reason that seems just to you, unlike the actions of your students, but the results are the same. In the end, they saw their mistake and did the right things, the things you taught them. Learn from your students, son." "Zedekus," his mother said, "would you let Richard die too, and all the other innocents? Appoint the Seeker."
"He's too young."
She shook her head with a gentle smile. "He will not get the chance to grow older."
"He has not passed my final test."
"Darken Rawl hunts Richard. The cloud that shadows him was sent by Rawl to track him. The snake vine was put in the jar by Dark and Rawl in the expectation that Richard would search for it and it would bite him. The snake vine wasn't meant to kill. Rawl sought to have him put to sleep by the fever until he could come for him. Her form drifted closer, her voice becoming more loving. You know in your heart you have been watching him, hoping he would show himself to be the one.
To what avail?
Zed closed his eyes, his chin sinking to his chest.
Dark and Rawl has the 3 boxes of Orden.
No, his father said. He has only 2. He still seeks the 3rd. Zed's eyes snapped open. His head jerked up.
What? He doesn't have them all?
No, his mother said. But he soon will.
And the book? Surely he must have the Book of Counted Shadows.
No. He searches for it. Zed put a finger to his chin, thinking. Then there's a chance, he whispered.
What sort of fool would put the boxes of Orden in play before he had all 3, and the book?
His mother's features sharpened into a look of ice. A very dangerous one. He travels the underworld. Zed stiffened, and his breath caught in his throat. His mother's eyes seemed to pierce him. That is how he was able to cross the boundary and recover the 1st box, by traveling the underworld. That is how he was able to begin the undoing of the boundary, from within the underworld. He commands some in it, more with his every coming. If you choose to help, be warned. Do not go through the boundary, or send the seeker through. Rawl expects it. If you enter, he will have you. The Mother Confessor came through only because he did not expect it. He will not make the same mistake again.
But then how am I to get us to the Midlands? I can't help if I can't get to the Midlands!
Zed's voice was tense with frustration. We're sorry, but we don't know. We believe there must be a way, but it is not known to us. That is why you must appoint the Seeker. If he is the right one, he will find a way. Their forms began to shimmer, to fade.
Wait! I must have the answers to my questions. Please, don't leave me!
We're sorry. It is not our choice. We are called back behind the veil.
Why is Rawl after Richard? Please, help me!
His father's voice was weak and distant. We don't know. You must search for the answers yourself. We have trained you well. You are more talented than we ever were. Use what you were taught and what you feel. We love you, son. Until this is settled one way or the other, we cannot come to you again. With Orden in play, coming again could tear the veil. His mother kissed her hand and held it out to him as he did the same in return. And then they were gone. Zedekus Zul Zorander, the great and honorable wizard, stood alone on the wizard's rock his father had given him and stared out into the night, thinking wizard's thoughts. Nothing is ever easy, he whispered.